Welcome back to A People's Guide to Publishing. I'm Joe Beal, the founder and CEO of Microcosm Publishing and Distribution. I'm also the author of A People's Guide to Publishing, which distills what I've learned from selling millions of books over the past 25 years.
I'm Ellie Blue. I'm the editorial and marketing director here at Microcosm. We are an independent Midlist publisher based in Portland, Oregon,
and Cleveland, Ohio. We have over 700 books, over 25 employees, and we make about 40 new books every year.
And we distribute thousands of titles from other publishers.
We started this podcast so that we can share what we've learned with newer publishers so that you can learn from our mistakes.
Or maybe you just want to understand the publishing industry.
This week, we are going to answer the question that should be a reader question, which is on all of our minds, which is, why is cheap labor not working any longer?
In publishing or generally?
Well, given that our podcast is about publishing,
I guess we could talk about it.
However, I guess that's the real question. It's kind of not working generally.
Well, let's start with laying the foundation of cheap labor in publishing. What has been the general practice?
So publishing is a very low yield, low margin, low profit industry, much like bookselling, much like, you know, many things in the arts loosely. And so, as such, there are many minimum wage jobs, and there are many positions where you are, you know, like, not even doing an internship, but just kind of, like, volunteering at a friend's company, mm-hmm. or even at a stranger's company for the simple fact of your love of books, or to some extension your, I don't know, appreciation for what they're doing, or to some extent trying to get experience in an industry to get one of those minimum wage jobs. And part of that is, you know, there's two, maybe three different worlds here. You know, there's the small press like us, there's the big five or major publisher house, or even like a big indie, like something that's like roughly 100 times our size. And I guess they're no longer like 100 times our size. They're like 30 times our size nowadays. But, and then there's like the bedroom, you know, it's like a registered as a business, but it's really not solvent. It's really not like able to have employees. It's really not able to, you know, there's not profits to divide, and that's sort of the third type of publisher, which is like the passion, independent press, small press that creates, you know, a lot of the most interesting, weird books that, like, you know, make it worth getting out of bed in the morning. And so, you know, the situation is obviously different at each one of these, but all three of them can kind of take advantage of the nature of the labor market.
It's true. And it's not just, it's both, I'd say, like, the low-paying jobs are both the white-collar and the blue-collar jobs in publishing.
Yeah, that's
when
true.
People talk about jobs in publishing, they're often forgetting the, like, warehouse jobs.
Yeah.
Which are usually really not that great.
Yeah. I mean, I remember you've often told the story on this program that you were wanting to become an editor at a publisher, but then when you saw that you would have to live on $20,000 in New York City, that seemed no longer like a reasonable goal.
And then I laugh. And then when I actually did get into publishing, I was making far less than that with much greater expenses than I would have had at 19.
Yeah.
But that was fine because I had learned how to scrape by on a shoestring. I mean, there's just a lot of for the white collar jobs, it's just been assumed that you will subsidize the job from other income, whether that's parents or spouses or like inherited wealth or whatever will essentially subsidize these literary publishing companies.
There was a famous story that I intend to write about in the new edition of the book that has weirdly been scraped from the internet, where a publisher's assistant at Balzer & Bray, an editorial assistant, worked, you know, as she puts it, like, she was expected to work 80 hours a week, and things only got worse when she couldn't or didn't do this or tried to go on vacation. And then when she went to her boss and asked for a raise, she was told to marry a rich husband.
Oof.
And, you know, that was only put forth because she was leaving the industry and wanted to make a point of how ridiculous the situation is. And, you know, and that's like working for, you know, a multi-billion dollar corporation at the end of the day. Like, the parent company of your division is, you know, it's like very moneyed, and they are certainly running at a profit for a profit. So it does beg the question why that has to be the working condition. So that's sort of one level. But all levels of publishing really rely on a human being, which is the noun I would like you to focus on, who is responsible for getting all of the books throughout the supply chain, putting books in boxes, getting books to stores, getting books to customers, getting books to people that read and love them. And that person is the warehouse worker.
And those people have been really not treated well or even considered to be a part of the publishing industry.
Yeah, yeah. And right, and it's fascinating how Shelf Awareness will not post job when, you know, somebody takes a new job as, you know, in the warehouse at such and such company.
No, it's totally true. I've, like, submitted lists of jobs to them, and they'll only put in the, like, supposedly white-collar ones.
And, you know, there was a, you know, and I feel like that typifies, you know, like, sort of the classism of the industry and how, you know, we think of publishing. Like, we don't think of that as valid labor. We don't think of that, you know, even though that's the labor that we would all be sunk without.
Yeah.
And so, on a whole nother level, you know, it's like, I was in a conference last week where somebody talked about the Wall Street Journal article about people, you know, leaving jobs they've had for years under the pandemic, because it finally gave them the moment where they're like, this is not what I want to do with my life. I want to find my meaning and purpose. But they said that that only applied to white-collar jobs, so they were confused why so many people were leaving their warehouse jobs. And you're like,
because they're terrible.
Well, because they have meaning and purpose in their brain, too. You know? It's like, it's not just white-collar people that want something out of life.
I know, right?
But, you know, that, you know, I feel like, and then every publisher has a warehouse in Indiana. Every publisher worth their salt does that there for, you know, reasons economic, more or less solely. You know, real estate, labor laws, minimum wage, etc. Real estate, you know, I guess availability of all that. Demand for jobs, you know, essentially they're like making use of economic conditions there. And so that seems to be the place where everybody is severely understaffed right now, where you just can't get enough people to do underpaid work, you know. And, you know, it's interesting because it's, you know, this is in some ways like what I would have predicted long ago, this notion of like people being like, no, I'm not putting that up with that anymore. But, you know, now we've moved out of the part of the narrative where you can blame government assistance or things like that. You know, it's more that this is now indicative of a broader trend of people that are just like, no, things have changed. I don't want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's just wages, though I do think wages are the major factor. I think it's sort of like the fact that these people have been discluded from the narrative, that they've not been considered part of the industry. And, you know, it's like there was a story years ago about the lowest tiered employees at Google who, you know, don't get any of the employee benefits, can't use the employee pool, can't use the, like, paddle ball. Or,
I mean, that's true at all those big tech companies that have supposedly woke human resources policies. Is like, there's different tiers.
But the people that work in publishing on that tier don't even work in the same state with the white-collar employees.
Yeah, and they're, like, never going to even encounter each other.
They don't even know that there's, like, what the employee perks are for those, you know, white collar workers. So it's like, you know, it's like being categorized as a different class of human being, you know.
And it's like you totally see the effects in like the receiving boxes that we see coming in the door, you know, when people have, especially when publishers have like outsourced their warehousing to like a fulfillment company that isn't, you know, that they're not even managing. It's like, you know, people are obviously putting things in boxes with like time constraints on them, yeah, and with like quotas, and not with a care for like how the books arrive. And I just every time I see like another pile of damaged books come up to the stack in front of my desk, I just like wonder if, you know, the white collar person making the decision even has any idea.
Right. Like
have they ever packed a box?
They see the numbers, you know, they see the consequences, but yeah, they don't necessarily. It's like whenever we've brought that issue to fore, we get the like, you know, assumption that that person is incompetent, or like that we are the problem somehow, or, you know, and a lot of it is, it's like sort of outsourcing on both sides. It's outsourcing sort of the scrutiny of the warehouse, and it's outsourcing the actual putting the book in the box, you know.
You know what we are starting to hear stories of, though, is like because warehouse workers are quitting, right, we're starting to hear stories of larger publishers and distribution companies flying all of their white-collar employees out to do, like, week-long shifts in their warehouses. Mm-hmm. And I do, like, I don't know, I wonder, I hope, will that actually change things once enough people, like, see what that's actually like and what that actually takes?
Well, I mean, I think what'll happen is, so most warehouses are running 2 to 3 weeks behind, is the other thing I learned at PNBA.
Oh, yeah.
And so we have, dare I say, one of the fastest warehouses in the industry, or I guess two of them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, on that level, we are seeing the consequences of, you know, low-paid work, people that are undervalued, and what that does during the holiday season, you know. And yeah. And I think that will be one of the bigger changes that you see in publishing because of the pandemic.
I was realizing there is a cost to all of this.
Thanks for joining us once again.
Please send your questions to podcast@microcosmpublishing.com so we can answer them on future episodes.
And please give us 5 stars on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed.
You can find us on the internet at microcosm.pub.
On Twitter at microcosm.
On Facebook at Microcosm Publishing.
On Instagram at Microcosm_pub.
And here in Portland, Oregon on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful week.